Suns fans, you know what time it is in the PHX.
Empire of the Suns.
Phoenix Suns.
The Empire of the Suns podcast is brought to you by Sonic. Sonic.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. Hey, Kevin.
How was not much? You know, head is mush because of certain sports things in the news cycle that aren't Suns related.
Multiple ownership stories this week, Kev. Multiple.
You mean
one or two?
Not one or two.
And longtime listeners of the pod will know that is what particularly melts our brain if they're on court happenings, on ice happenings. We can dissect those pretty well, but once we start to get off the
I've learned a lot
diamond
about
or off the field for football. Did I say field yet?
Probably not.
That's when our heads start to spin a bit. Not because we're
We've learned a lot about hedge funds and mortgages and
not because we're inept land in this category per se, but it's just like we have to really dive in and like engross ourselves into the story.
Let's just say I spent the morning emailing with the state land department
super cash money of all Arizona sports teams to stop doing this.
Yeah,
that'd be tight. The clicks are sick, everyone, but let's be chill.
Let's be normal. Hey, how was the Player 15? You were down there. They have new offices.
It was
for the
tight.
Team.
Yeah, we'll get to it a bit later.
Okay.
It was cool though. I'm very happy for the Suns staff who have been in subpar working conditions in the arena in terms of just like what's around them, the space they were in, and it's very to what it should be for a NBA franchise. I guess I'll say, and it's even going beyond that, which we'll talk about in a bit. Hey, Kev. The Suns are back.
Every time you say that, they're just...
I don't know.
You don't want to say that, but
I just think it's a funny bit. 45-31, they are sixth in the Western Conference. They defeated the New Orleans Pelicans, which was gigantic because they are now tied with the Pelicans in the standings. But guess what? They're ahead of them because they got the tiebreaker now. They play them again on Sunday. That was going to be the game of the season for different reasons. Like, oh man, like if you lose this one, you lose to Minnesota, lose this one, because we all assume Minnesota will be the favorites tomorrow because they're really, really, really good. They have 53 wins and there's still a lot of games left. I think that's one of the crazier things we're looking at here, is that we have the potential for at least four teams to reach 50 plus wins, and three of those are going to be like mid 50s. Not a terribly rare occurrence by any means, but typically you see like kind of what's going on in the East, which is like Boston's destroying everyone there at 60 right now.
Yeah.
And then you've got like a teams in like the low to mid 40s, maybe one in the high low 50s, but it's been a crazy year. They beat the Cavaliers as well. So they are now sixth, and that game on Sunday against New Orleans, they can really separate themselves from the Pelicans, because let's say that the Suns win tomorrow night. Let's say they do three in a row, Kev.
Yeah.
Let's say they do the dang thing. Let's say New Orleans beats San Antonio. That's who they play on Friday. They play Portland on Tuesday. But then their last three games of the year, New Orleans is are at Sacramento, at Golden State. Golden State is the second of a back-to-back. And then home against the Lakers. And guess what? All three of those teams are going to have something to play for. There are very high odds that at the very least, Sacramento and Golden State games are going to be massive. Maybe the Lakers are in a position where it doesn't matter if they win or lose, or they want to lose or something. I don't know. I don't think they'll be in a position where they want to lose, because there's no matchups to really play at. You want to be in the 7-8 if possible, or the 9-10. But if the Suns beat them on Sunday, they make it four wins in a row. They will essentially be two games ahead of them, because the Pelicans will be at 32, they'll remain at 31, and then they just have to hold out, basically. I think they just have to go 500 from there and then be okay. Now, that's getting ahead of ourselves. Minnesota game, the Pelicans game itself again, we'll get into that. But what what did you think of these two basketball games? Because I think you and I are, if the spectrum of being a Suns analyst, or let's just simplify it even more, and this is the way I like to put it, watching, listening, whatever, you watch a lot of Suns basketball games like us, and all of these people together have an opinion on where the team is at right now. You are either way over here, which is they are going to be able to flip a switch, turn it on, whatever, when the playoffs start. That's part of what we're seeing now. Or you are a rotten old curmudgeon who believes that the lows of the team that we've seen predominantly for the majority of the season are who this team is. This is fake news, all this kind of stuff. I think you and I are kind of over in the curmudgeon side of the spectrum, but we're not like aggressively over there. Like, this team's doomed by any means.
Yeah.
Am I correct in saying that? Where are you at?
I think so, because I do believe, as we've seen again, they will flip a switch to at least, like, the offense has looked really good in spurts. They've gotten huge leads in the last couple games, and you see like the intensity level, you see a little more attention to detail on defensive, on the defensive end, and like there is, the ceiling's raised when that happens, I think. But then every third quarter against the Cavs happens where they let off the gas pedal, they don't have the focus. Like, that's the biggest thing. And it doesn't even matter what you think them at their peak, oh, they found their peak, they're a really good team. It doesn't matter how much you think they're a really good team when they are punching the gas pedal. It's the fact that they don't have it down all the time, and that is what's consistent, is they're not consistent. And for that reason, it's like, I can't sell myself on this being a title contender, even though, like, what, in 2 months, if they're in the finals, I'd be like, okay. Like, I wouldn't be necessarily surprised, but I don't think they're going to get there now because of this. Like, I think the Western Conference playoff picture, to speak to what you were just saying, is crazy competitive, but also it's about matchups. And I think that's what we've seen in their individual series, where you talk about, why have they beat Denver? Why have they looked so bad against the Clippers? Why have they done well against the Pelicans? Like, some matchups are just going to go well. And so, like, that's a non-committal answer, but as far as where we're at, we're in the middle, because this team has been so up and down. So, I don't know. I just don't see any reason to go hard on one end, because I do think it's a really talented team. I do think that they haven't reached their potential, but I do think there is, like, the human nature. Like, this team could be bored for the entire regular season and to some degree get a little better, at least, like, with the effort and stuff. But that doesn't mean they're going to just suddenly be this elite team that we haven't seen all season.
The Warriors did that, but they're the Warriors. They were a dynasty. They had all this continuity together. Like, that's a once in a 20 or 30 years type of finals run that they did. Like, that just doesn't happen. Like, I don't think that, like, for example, to compare them to another team in the East, Milwaukee is not going to be able to be like, it's playoff time, we got our chance. It's like, no, you're a different team. You're under a different coach. It's not the same. And they're going to probably struggle as a result. Whereas teams with a little bit more continuity, where, I hate to say this out loud because we just saw how terrible they played, but Cleveland and like New York, like teams that have been together at least a little bit longer, New York's added some new pieces. But, and then obviously Boston, that's like why Boston is probably going to just annihilate the East, because not only do they have the continuity edge, but they are far and away like the best in that conference.
The weird part about the Suns is, as much as we're like, they haven't met their potential, like, go look at their record right now and then go say, okay, they didn't lose that many games to the Spurs. You pick out, like, what, who have they lost to? Like, Blazers, they have a loss.
Yeah.
Pistons, do they have a loss?
Well, the good news is,
you just take a few wins away and suddenly they're a top four seed, and this isn't even a conversation, but we're having it because they've done that for, yeah.
Late third quarter, Grayson Allen hits three threes in 90 seconds. The Suns go on a 14-2 run on the road. They're in blank city. They go up 14. There are certain teams that are going to look around and be like, we've never been in this position. It's game four. We're down 2-1 in the series, or we're up 2-1 in the series. This is a massive moment in the series. Can we lock in, focus? We know they're going to fall off in the fourth quarter, that kind of stuff, right? When I look at the standings, Denver is the only team that really has that continuity to a certain extent. I think that Minnesota has quite a bit.
Yeah.
They've been able to really establish some stuff. Finch has been there a while. I think Oklahoma City has a lot more than you would just think off the top of your head. Now, playoff experience, no, but continuity, Dagnall's been there like the whole time. It's like the Mike Malone, Mike Brown teams and Michael Malone.
Michael, yes. I thought you were going to correct that part first. Okay.
But Yes. Who am I thinking of?
Kings?
Brett Brown. Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. It's been a long day. We've been in a lot of places. Brett Brown, those teams that were going around Philly and then they got there. It's like they got there with him. So there was continuity there, but ultimately they had to make another decision and move on. I think Dallas has a bit. Now it's a different dynamic with Kyrie, but not so quietly. Him and Luka have just figured it out. They've got new pieces, Gafford and Washington, who are fitting into a certain extent, but Jason Kidd on the defensive end, you've seen it. They've been pretty good. I want to say the Clippers with Ty Lue, but they're a mess right now. Did you see the Paul George quote about James Harden?
No.
It's not good. The Pelicans have it. The Kings have it. The Lakers do not have it. The Warriors certainly do have it. So there's a mix of it, but Denver's the only team where you're like, there is a tremendous advantage. So again, if they get matched up with a team like Minnesota or OKC, that's like another reason. They don't have an advantage all of a sudden. They have the least continuity of any team in this 10 by far, unfortunately for them. But this ties back to a conversation we had maybe 2 months ago, 3 months ago, somewhere in that range, where we talked about how we have to evaluate this team differently right now.
Yeah,
we have to evaluate them through the lens of not only do they need to improve and start winning games, but they need to get to at least a certain threshold for them to meet their expectations, because I think it's a popular thing to say right now, or 6 weeks, more like 6 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I think like the Wemby loss, the loss to the Wembyless Spurs was the one where everyone was like, stop saying they're a title contender. They're not a title contender. It's like, well, no one's saying they're a title contender, but we have to stay true to what the expectations were for the team, because that's the entire reason they did all of this.
Yeah.
The entire reason why they mortgaged their future. I said it on the air last week. We're not going to know how much this was worth it, not worth it, until we see how quote unquote bad it gets. Like, how bad is it really without all these draft picks and without two building blocks of your future, all that kind of stuff? We don't know. We have to get down there. Unfortunately, I can't be the hot take guy and say right now they should have never traded for Kevin Durant, all that kind of stuff. I don't feel one way or the other right now, and I'm probably not going to for quite a while still. But with that in mind, I bring that up because of these two games. And again, I'm just asking for 40 minutes, maybe 35 in a game. And I can't get it.
Yeah.
It's just what I want as a basketball fan. I just want to see the Phoenix Suns put together 40 minutes of solid, consistent basketball, and preferably do it against a team that is playing at the highest level. I thought that the Pelicans were trying to at the start of the game. The game plan execution against Zion was fantastic, and they really dialed it in. And then the turnovers and the transition defense and all that stuff in the second half filtered in, and all of a sudden Booker had to go and hit two shots late for it to be a result for them. And then Wednesday, it's even more severe how far ahead they are and how much they blow out the Cavs. I tweet before halftime, there's some minor slippage showing here. They got to come out in the start of the third quarter and just not allow this to be a game. Just don't give up. You don't have to, like, blow them out more and go up 40. Just
play even.
Just hold even there, and they immediately give up, what was it, a 15-4 run?
Is it 17? I don't know.
17. Yeah. It was 17-5. Yeah, it was 17-5 to start the quarter. And then coming out of that timeout, Mitchell's, like, bouncing around. He's getting to his spots. They're zooming around on defense. Did it ultimately matter in the grand scheme of the game? It didn't, and they were fortunate that it didn't. But we've seen that. We've talked about that in the Houston game they lost a couple weeks ago. We've talked about it all the time, about those little slippages. And, again, it was just turnover, turnover, turnover. And the turnovers at this point now that lead to open baskets or lead to just free transition points, you just, like, you don't even, I don't know, fans watching get very pissed off, I imagine. And if I was in their position rooting for a basketball team like that did that, I would agree with them. But for me, as, like, the melancholy sort of observer, it's just become, like, not ritual, but
that's the Phoenix, like, Suns.
I don't get surprised or anything. I'm just like, oh, here come the turnovers. Here comes the misorganization. Here comes, like, a good look or two not going in that spirals them even further. And I thought that they were two good wins, but they don't need good wins right now. They need complete great wins, because guess what? You are not going to get as lucky as they did on Monday and Wednesday in the playoffs against anyone, even those teams. You're not going to get that lucky. Playoff basketball is different. And that's the last thing I'll say in terms of, like, the negatives from that game, because there were certainly positives that we'll get into here in a sec.
And I don't think the way they were just beating down the Cavs, getting open shots, like, you're not going to build that lead to be up 20. Maybe you're up 10 if you play that well, is what I'm saying. And then when you let the slippage happen, suddenly you're down 5 instead of still up 10, 15, you know? So I just don't think that's going to carry over well at all. And like, if how many games are left? If
six,
six, if they play six consistent games
to this level or the level I'm talking about,
just
if they play your to this level, level, yeah, they're going to get top six. Yeah. This is, there's a difference between getting top six and like actually making improvements where you are going to make a run in the postseason.
Yeah.
And I feel like the latter is what I want to see more of over these 2 weeks. And I've seen a bit, but there's so much more left on the table. It's just stop doing dumb stuff. Stop getting disorganized. Like it's so preventable.
Yeah. And it's like weird why we're talking about little things and terrible passes that are lazy over the top through traffic. Just I don't understand it. And then when they go make the simple pass, the ball starts screaming around. It's like,
and again, the victory of getting the sixth seed is facing either Minnesota, who's the best defensive team in the league, Denver, who is the worst matchup for them, in my opinion, or Oklahoma City, who is the best team in the league at forcing turnovers and gets to the paint. They have the player that gets to the paint more than any other perimeter player in the league, and those are, again, like conflicting weaknesses. What's the biggest weakness for the Suns on offense? Turnovers. What's their biggest weakness on defense? It is dribble penetration, and then it is a result of that, which the Thunder are one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league. We talked about that earlier in the week.
Yeah.
Speaking of three-point shooting, the Suns closed out March. They were top 10 in three-pointers made per game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I said made. Attempted, they're 21st. Still not good enough, but if they're making nearly 40% of them, that's okay, and that's where you kind of see these games like we've been seeing these last couple of games where you see the bleed over of their incredible efficiency outside of threes. And it's like, yeah, they can have that efficiency from three too, because this roster as it stands has, trying to think, in terms of really great shooters, I think that they've got five. Like I believe the big three, I'm counting all of them. Yes. Even with some of Beal's struggles at some points this year. Yes. Booker slumps, excuse me. Durant slumps here and there, whatever. I'm still counting them as incredible shooters. The five guys I wrote about, Grayson and Eric as well. So if they're clicking and they're moving the ball and they're flying around, they can put up 30 plus assists and they can make up for having 15 turnovers. That game, what was it? They still wound up scoring 122.
Yeah.
They turned it over 15 times. Like, you can still make up for the turnovers if you're shooting like 40 or 50% from three, for getting to the line a decent amount, if you're getting those assists up to 30 plus. Let me know if you agree with this.
Okay.
This is, again, I'm going to look at the camera. If anyone at Synergy can please reach out to me and let me either like pay, I'll pay for your database, but I don't have like $7 million to do it. You know what I mean?
You don't in this.
For those not familiar, there's a database, Synergy, Second Spectrum, whatever it's called these days, where you can look at like everything that happens on a court. I could look at it and tell you, when Bol Bol takes two dribbles, and he goes left, this is what he's shooting as opposed to when he goes right. This is how often this guy's in a drop. You can look at everything. So I would love to go on there and look at how often Bradley Beal is bringing the ball up now as opposed to 2 weeks ago. I would love to see how many touches Yusuf Nurkic is getting in certain areas of the floor now compared to 2 months ago. But to me, what I'm seeing is this is Superman and Batman, and they're just going to take this team as far as they can. That's what I've seen in these two games, at least. And guess what? It looks pretty darn good, especially when Nurk and Brad are very good complementary glue guys.
Yeah, it's weird.
And I had to write it. It is very weird. I wrote it last night. I was like, Beal's done an incredible job, like, having glue guy skills, because we see stars in these situations sometimes. Again, Bradley Beal's a star. He averaged 30 points back-to-back years. Guys on terrible teams don't do that just easy. And he wasn't even on terrible teams. He was on halfway.
Ask Jordan Poole how it's been.
Halfway decent teams. Go look at a Washington Wizards roster in the last like 7 years. Post John Wall, look at their rosters and see what he was working with. He was trying his best, man. He's an excellent basketball player. So for him to be doing what he's been doing in these games, like Book mentioned, the tap outs and stuff. For Nurk to be doing what he's doing, which he's just done taking threes, they stopped having him shoot threes. The post touches were a thing about 15, 20 games ago where we're going to reward the big man. We're going to reward him. We're going to feed him. Now they're not looking him off, but it's just like, we're going to keep it moving instead. You've got position there. You're 12 feet out, but you need to be right next to the rim if I'm going to give you the ball now. Like, he's getting one or two of those a game, maybe. And it's just basically on Booker and Durant. And guess what? It looks pretty great. And I don't say guess what, and like they should have done this earlier, but the reason why I think it's happening is because they tried. They tried their best to get Brad in a spot where he could be on the ball quite a bit. It went okay, but okay is going to get them bounced in the first round. So now they're reworking the format, and like next summer, this summer will really be about continuity and cohesion between the three of them and Nurk, and getting the four of them in a sophisticated high level offense.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this was supposed to be this season. We have to remind ourselves again. That is not what it has been. Vogel today described it as good, not great, and then the age-old line of like, good is the worst enemy of great, or whatever.
It is.
But yeah, what have you thought of like the turn? Do you agree with the turn that I've been seeing in the last couple of games? At least?
I mean, I still think, one, I think it's cool that they've tried to keep the ball in Brad's hands, even though if he's not like, hey, Brad, go act like KD and Book. Like, no, we don't need that from you. But you're still having the ball in your hands, right? Like, second quarter break, like, he's still operating the offense a lot more heavily there. I think that helps with rhythm, even if he is, like, doing playmaking and passing stuff more. Just have the ball in your hands. And then you see the moments when he's third banana or whatever, like he ended up, I think, was it the first or second play maybe last night, open three in the corner. Like,
yeah, the guys are still saying, like, I think Kev said last night, like, some nights it's going to be Brad, some nights I think we're past that now. I don't think it's going to be some nights anymore.
No, but he's it looks good is yes. What to your point is, and so I think they figured that out. And to be fair, and what we kind of were like, okay, if there are bumps in the road, which obviously there have been to a greater degree than we thought, yeah, it's going to be about the offense and that sophistication. And can you hit that point of sophistication at the end of the season? And obviously we're at a no right now. I don't think it's going to come up in the next six games. But I think one thing I read this week was, and it just popped up on my timeline, but it was about how, I think it was after the first LeBron Heat team with he and D-Wade and Chris Bosh, like Tom Haberstroh wrote about how Eric Spoelstra went and hung out with Chip Kelly and learned spread offense for football and thought about how am I applying this. I think it popped up because of the LeBron podcast maybe or something. But anyway, the whole point of that is like he had to take in what he learned about these three like players who used to have the ball, and he spent a whole frickin' summer thinking about how do I make rules for our team that are emphasizing these things? How do I make LeBron better? Because at the time, like if you remember when they lost to Dallas in that finals, was it 2011? Yeah.
Don't remember the year, but he was bad in that series. Yeah, it was rough.
They basically were like, hey, you're not a jump shooter, so we're just going to play off of you, and he... like the passing lanes were wonky. He could drive into people.
LeBron described it as like the runway or something where if you're a big and we're moving off a miss.
The midseason tournament lane where they painted the stripe across
the middle of the floor because we need that for driving lanes and you'll get a kick out 18 footer or whatever. It was so weird to see kick out passes for 18 footers, by the way, for those flips instead of threes. That was 10 years ago. It wasn't 100 years ago. It was 10 years ago. But yeah, to your point, like the Suns coaching staff needs to go meet with Mike Shanahan.
It's not like we're criticizing them, but obviously like that didn't happen. It's understandable. This is complicated. These are complicated people.
Yes.
Complicated basketball players that can evolve, but like this wasn't expected to be smooth. So yeah, I mean,
yeah, that was a joke, by the way. I'm not seriously saying they should go consult Mike Shanahan.
Yeah, but no, don't
do
not
go through
Kyle.
Some sort of
okay.
There needs to be a cognitive rethinking process. We'll see what the coaching staff is. I don't know what it
also
will.
Also that
be.
Yeah, Kevin Young also apparently attached to that Hornets job.
As he should be. He should get a shot. Last thing I'll say on Beal. Here's what's going to happen. The Suns are going to get eliminated in the playoffs at some point. And at that point, everyone is going to hyperanalyze on Beal and how he is underperforming and how this is the worst year of his career and all this stuff. And what I'm going to say then, but and what I'll say now is He's done everything the team's asked. He's played through multiple injuries. He's worked his way back from all these other injuries. And again, as his role gets smaller and smaller, he's still playing well. If I told you they could trade Chris Paul for a guy that is going to effectively run your offense in stints and get to the rim as much as possible, be the best rim pressure guy on your team, be a good three-point shooter, and someone who is active defensively. Now, has Brad been a good to great defender this year? I don't know. I haven't focused enough on it centrally, but he's really working hard, especially in the last 6 weeks since the point guard flip. He's been busting it on defense. So I think that that deal and like his arrival has actually worked out fine. It's been okay. It is not going to be.
If we're talking about
when we're having these conversations and whenever it is, whenever the season's over, we are not going to be talking about how should they have traded Chris Paul. Now, it's an interesting discussion to have then. Like, if you would have gotten Chris Paul to take the Golden State role, but take it here, that's a different conversation. But like, that's, you're shaking your head. No, I'm shaking my head. Like, there's no way that would have happened ever.
No.
Like, it just wouldn't happen.
No.
It was time. It was time.
And also, when we have that discussion about whether he's living up to expectations, everyone, I think, naturally has the, he's being paid $50 million to do this job that obviously that's, he's better than that and he's worth not as much in his role doing that, and it just doesn't match up. So I think people easily gravitate, well, why are we paying this X amount for this talent? And it's like, well, you know what? Because if you had traded Chris Paul for anyone else, you wouldn't have gotten that talent at all. So you either overpay and get less, or you just tank whatever his amount of money and say farewell to it, and they got a good player in return. So like, that's how you have to judge the trade.
I have a feeling next episode we're going to be talking about how necessary it is for them to avoid the play-in because of the break they'll need. Durant and Booker played 41 and 39 minutes in those games. Only 36 and 37 this one, but it was a 25-point blow at a certain point, and they still had to play 36 and 37 minutes. That is going to continue, like I said, to my point of these two guys, Superman and Batman. And they might need that break because, man, if they can't get to six and they have to play, like, they're playing every other day at this point, and there's a back-to-back somewhere in there as well. I believe it's Tuesday, Wednesday, I want to say. We're looking at Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, I believe, is the slate the rest of the season. And if you play in the play-in, I think it's at Tuesday or Wednesday. It's quick. So having that break of the play-in tournament to rest for them will be big. Last basketball thing before we go.
Yeah.
This is going to be a talking point for a lot of people. I don't really pay it any mind because I just don't really have that strong of an opinion on it to see both sides of it. I just don't see both sides of it. Royce starting, it looked great.
Mm-hmm.
Grayson missed a game. Royce started, it looked great. People have been asking for this in some stretches anyway, and we saw it, and it looked good. Grayson's back tomorrow. He's probable, so we assume he's back. People are already replying, like, is he going to come off the bench? And all this kind of stuff. What do you think? Because I lean one way incredibly heavily at no slight to either guy.
It's not going to happen. But I will say there's something that I've been wondering even before that, where it's like he has played really well with the starters. Can you mismatch rotations where he's with them more a little bit, or do you get him more minutes? I think they should, like, I would hope they're having conversations about how to optimize him, but you can't penalize Grayson because Grayson's been awesome this season.
He's been fantastic.
So like, yeah, you want to keep Grayson where he is. And then you want to talk about how do we get this out of Royce coming off the bench is how I will answer your question, I think. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Kevin Durant, net ratings. He's the one guy where his net ratings are kind of weird on the team.
Mm-hmm.
His net rating with Booker, it's still at 0.7 post All-Star break, which, like, I don't understand. Durant and Beal, 2.2. With Allen, 3.7. And then in 393 minutes with Royce, it's 6.6.
Ah.
So I do wonder, I think I'm with you. I just don't think it makes sense for the team. I think Grayson, as a complete player, has been much better than people think. He has been better defensively than he was supposed to be. Again, is he stopping Shea if they get him? No. But like, he's been working and setting an example. And he's been the one guy on the team, the one guy who has been trying all year, who's been consistently there with his effort all year.
Yeah.
He's also shooting nearly 50% from three. And guess what teams are going to do when Kevin Durant and Devin Booker are trying to be Superman and Batman? They're going to leave Grayson Allen open. And he's going to have a game in the playoffs where he hits seven threes probably. Like, it's...
He's been that guy of the... Someone random's going to get loose this game if you defend Book and KD. He's been that guy too much to just... Yeah.
Now, if they match up with Denver and Jamal Murray's going nuts and they have no answers and it's game four and they're down 3-0, do they start Royce instead of Grayson? Maybe they switch it up. Maybe they try something different. I don't know. But I don't see it. I just think Grayson's been phenomenal, and there's just no reason to really move him. Now, could Grayson perhaps not close a game? Yeah, sure. If it's one of those weird ones where he's taking three shots and they can't find him the ball and teams are staying home on him, then you'd rather have Royce's defense. Sure, I guess. I don't know. That's about it in terms of the on-court stuff. You got anything?
No.
Player 15,
mm-hmm.
group,
headquarters.
Is a thing. I don't fully understand what the thing is, but essentially it is involving Sun staff, Mercury staff, Arena staff, and then there's other ventures that may possibly, that I don't know.
It's okay, so when did they announce that?
It has only been 5 months since they announced that they were going to open a new facility, and they're already going to be working out of there on Monday.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. Footprint Center... America West Arena, they had offices there. If you walk on Jefferson, you see those like glass windows and stuff. Like, those are some of the office spaces. It is, according to my various sources, just being people who work there, it's a mess. It's a maze. It takes a long time to get around. It is not like productive for them. Often when you're trying to go track someone down, it's like trying to just track someone down. If I have something to say to you at work, I just look over my monitor and say something to you. But that's not how a lot of their office space is. So that's one. And most importantly, so all those people now are going to have a building three blocks away where a gazillion workstations. One, it's just a building to work out of. It's not functioning as an arena. Two, yeah. You can imagine the hurdles that occur when someone's got to get a project done and the crew for the Jonas Brothers are setting up. You know what I mean? Like, there are problems with that office space for a myriad of reasons, and they cleared it up, and it's fantastic, and it's a really good job by them. But they get to go to this place where it's another thing. Like, we walked in the cafeteria and Josh Bartelstein told us, like, yeah, they're going to have like breakfast and lunch will be here. And it's like, man, like, if you were at the arena, you just had to go get food somewhere. You had to get it delivered or whatever. And now they're having the food with you. You can take a break. There's various like amenities of like break time. There's pickleball, basketball, arcade machines, ping pong, those types of things that you're used to seeing in an office. Maybe more so the latter things than the former things. It looks like a much more conducive work environment, and is going to greatly upgrade their efficiency in all of their departments massively. So it was sort of a no-brainer. But again, as we have talked about on this podcast, pre-ownership change and post-ownership change, just because it makes sense doesn't mean people do it. Someone's got to be able to spend money on it. And this man, Mr. Ishbia, has been spending the money. There's going to be a Mercury practice facility.
It's attached.
It's attached. Okay. It's right next to it. You can walk out a door and walk into the facility pretty much. It is going to be ready by July. They're scooting. They're moving. They're going to have it done, or hope to have it done, before the WNBA All-Star break. And they're going to have people back around. But essentially what Ishbia said is, we've got one of the best practice facilities in the league. We're going to have the best practice facility in the WNBA. And then this type of facility isn't one that's necessarily common, like another building for employees, basically, that's right next to the arena. So, again, like, there are certain people working there who don't have to be at the game, but then they have to go to the arena that day, or they do have to be at the game, but they only have to be there for a certain amount of time. So then they can just leave and then go to the...
Yeah.
Go to the place instead of hearing the defense chants over and over again.
I don't know if this is obvious or people pay attention, but it's kind of crazy. Like, remember, what was the story? I'm sure Paul Coro wrote it. I think he was on the beat when they drafted. They did not draft. They thought on draft night they had traded for Steph Curry, whatever.
Mario.
Was that the night that they heard the... Like, reporters were in the building, could hear the draft room scream or something?
I think that's the same story.
Yeah.
You're a little bit more educated on that year's happenings than I am, because I was just a very casual fan at the time. Like, I wasn't really, like, even reading articles.
Well, my brain has rotted since then. Yeah, dude, but point being, the reporters who were at the draft headquarters heard the draft war room scream, because this was all in one, like, tiny sliver of building on the side of the arena. And then, obviously, since then, the basketball operations moved out to Camelback in, what, 44th? And so that took out, like, James Jones and his staff, at least, and the basketball men who used to practice in the arena in, like, where there's now a club or whatever. And now the Mercury have that, but also, like, all the business offices are there. Like, that's basically three buildings full of people in one building, that the majority of the building was the basketball court and the stands.
Yeah. And
so, well, this is nicer is what I'm trying to get at.
And the whole point of this is, you can see what's happening with the Mercury right now. Bartlestein said they're her agent talked to, if you're not familiar, Clea Copper, tons of accolades, faced the Mercury in the finals. They traded the number three pick and a couple of other stuff to get her to come here. And they said she wanted to come here because she saw the work they were putting in. And again, Ishbia said it too, like, that's going to matter. They're going to be able to retain free agents because people want to stay here because they see the work that they're putting in. And the hope there is that you overcome some of the shortcomings that are coming in the next couple of years, and you're still able to attract talent here because of the efforts that you're putting in, which they certainly are right now.
And he also kind of called out Dan Gilbert a little bit. I don't want to go talk about that.
Billionaires be beefing, dude.
They are beefing, apparently. Still beefing.
Have you heard the term, I won't say the word, FU money? That's FU money, man. When you have enough money to continue your quarrels in it through the media publicly like that, it's some stuff. I love it. The billionaire beef, as we referred to it. We talked about it like 2 years ago, and it still goes.
I'll give the quick summation of that whole thing this week right now, as fast as I can.
Nah.
Oh, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
I read too much. I have to put it somewhere.
Take a nap with my eyes open for 45 seconds. Go ahead.
ESPN put out a story on Matt Ishbia feuding with Dan Gilbert. They both own...
Were the Suns on ESPN?
That night? Yeah, they happened to be. Dan Gilbert owns the Cavaliers. They both own mortgage companies. They don't like each other's practices. Some media company that's affiliated with some hedge fund group put out a very detailed, more into something. They were like, hey, is this fraud? I don't know. Is it a legal thing? I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what is wrong or what is right in that. You can go read it if you want. There's biases in that. It rolled out the same day. Where else is there? There's not much to go off of, but he does own the number one mortgage lending company in the country. So if you see anything about that place being, like, actually in trouble of, like, uh-oh, they did illegal things, then maybe you can get concerned. But until that's out there on the table, or someone who's more an expert than me, like, is like, oh, this is a problem, after reading that, I don't know if that's happened, really.
So what we refer to in the biz is waiting for additional sourcing.
Let's
hear it from multiple outlets.
There's also, like, there is a litigation. Someone filed litigation against them. I don't know if it's legit or not. That's all. Otherwise, it doesn't really concern you, unless, like, Matt Ishbia couldn't own the Suns for some reason, but that's not anything confirmed or even, like, yeah, he did something like that. Yeah.
I'll quit my job on this podcast if you turn Cats Talk into litigation talk.
I'll do it.
I'll quit.
Yeah.
I'll get out.
I read too much. I've read too much things that aren't basketball things.
I can go do other stuff, man. I got other things in life to pursue.
Yeah.
That concludes litigation talk.
I hope so. Did that make sense?
One and only edition of litigation talk. It made a lot of sense. Yes.
It's basically not. Everyone made a big deal.
Just like anything.
Yeah.
For the most part, in this range, take it for face value. Take it for what it is.
Everyone made a big deal about
adventure.
Oh, he said bad words on a voicemail. It's like, that's not the story. Even that's not important.
Yeah.
Have you ever said bad words before? No comment? You say no comment.
I almost cursed in front of him yesterday. Okay. Two listeners who might be listening right now were very kind, and I took a photo with them, and I was about to say the F word, and then I was like, oh, no. And then it reminded me children listen to this podcast, apparently.
Really?
I guess so. The kid was stoked. I don't know.
Thanks, kids.
Thank you, child. I should have asked for your guys' name so I could shout you out, but you know who you are.
You did shout them out. All right. Oh, thanks for litigation talk with me.
I'm tired.
I shouldn't have even tried.
I'm ready for basketball tomorrow. Can we do basketball tomorrow, please? Is that okay?
Almost there.
Final four pick, go.
Boring UConn.
Purdue.
Yeah. That'd be my number two.
I want the DJ Burns Cinderella story to never end, but that guy is Godzilla. Oh, yeah.
That guy's fun.
And the annoying thing is, the really annoying thing about watching them, because I don't particularly enjoy them, is they have guards who make shots all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they get in close games, and then the guards are just like, oh, we'll just hit three threes in 3 minutes, and game's over. And it's like, well, that's annoying, because you have the best player in the country and like one of the best college basketball players of all time. And then you get those guys, too.
Yeah.
And like, Braden Smith. We have a Purdue listener, definitely. So that's rough. I say this because I tweeted, like, I apologize to people who are Suns fans and Illinois fans, because Illinois got absolutely rolled in the second half.
Yeah.
Lauren Colville, diehard Illinois fan, for me saying this on the podcast.
I made some Terrence Love Jr. jokes. Some Caleb, yeah, Shannon Jr.
There were, and like, I had multiple people being like, thank you, this is brutal. And it's like, yeah, you had to watch your teams in different ways do this. That's tough. But they had a great year. They had a great run. So they have nothing to be disappointed or sad about. It was just not the best ending. But that's how everyone feels about the Sun seasons too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. The thing about Sonic is they let you add flavoring to your drinks, and not a lot of people know that. So if you go there and ask like for them to put something or something in there, they'll do a little something something. That made it sound like it's like an illegal something.
Cherry can be already be in it.
Just get tater tots and get like a vanilla Dr. Pepper. You know what I mean? Like that's what I used to do when I was a youth and I had whatever. Okay.
All right.
Are we done?
You want me to end it?
Yeah, you sign us off, brother. I don't care anymore.
You don't know how. All right, Kellen doesn't know how to sign us off. I'll do it right now. See ya, everyone.
Great job.